This is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
Welcome back to First Up as we kick off our second hour of our show here on a Thursday morning in sort of a mild weather conditions in Toronto, as I'm looking at a -1 degree temperature. And, you know, we're waking up this morning dissecting the Maple Leafs game, but there was two other games on the NHL schedule last night. And I'm not sure if you saw the lead going into the Leaf games, which was kicked off by Montreal visiting Boston. And there's two things that come out of this game. One, the Montreal Canadiens still have 50 games to play this season, and they are horrible.
7-24-4 are the Montreal Canadiens.
They are, so sorry, they have 45 games left to play. Sorry, 47 games left to play this season. I rounded up. And the other thing that came out of that game was Brad Marchand, hat trick, leading the way for the Boston Bruins. And not just Brad Marchand hat trick, the Boston Bruins getting on a roll lately too, winning their third game in a row and just climbing the ladder in this Atlantic division, which you look at right now, you got the two Florida teams sitting at 53 points apiece. And as good as the Maple Leafs have been this season, I mean, they're 23-9-3 with 49 points. They're sitting in third place. In any other division, they'd be leading with that amount of points. And lurking behind them with two games in hand are the Boston Bruins with 42 points.
It's going to be a gauntlet, man. You talk about the playoffs. Like, if the Leafs don't win the Atlantic, they will be almost certainly playing one of Florida or Tampa in round one. But, like, do you really draw a distinction between the Leafs and the Bruins? Like, do you think one team has a better chance to win the Cup than the other? I think it's basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with Tuukka Rask coming back, I don't know what he still has left in the tank at this point in time. But you're getting Rask. You have depth in goal with Allmark and Swayman. We know Bergeron, Pasternak, Marchand. Like, these guys are going to be exceptional. Marchand's been ridiculous. So for the Leafs to go on a Stanley Cup run, they're probably going to have to beat two of Tampa, Florida, and Boston.
Right.
Good luck. Like, I mean, it's possible. Don't get me wrong. But it's extremely challenging. And I was thinking about this last night, kind of looking through the standings. It is such an easier path in the West to get to the Stanley Cup than it is in the East. Because you're not only talking about the teams in the Atlantic. You're talking about Carolina and New York and Washington and Pittsburgh and the Metro. Meanwhile, if you're Colorado, like, you have Vegas. You have Calgary. Like, who else are the good teams in the West? I would argue there's eight great teams in the East.
Yeah.
And maybe two in the West. With, I'm talking about Vegas, and I'm talking about the Colorado Avalanche, and that's it. So huge disadvantage for any teams out East, because you're going to have to run through three stellar hockey clubs to get to the postseason.
Well, I mean, you're looking at the Pacific Division. I think it's going as most people expected it to go, where you have the Vegas Golden Knights that are clearly the cream of the crop of that division, leading that division, and they're going to get one of the best young players in the game back sometime within the next month, and that's Jack Eichel. So they're only going to, you know, add to that group. And then you got Anaheim, LA, San Jose, Calgary, and Edmonton right now, who sits in the sixth seed in that division, and they made news yesterday with this whole Evander Kane situation again. And you don't really know how that's going to play itself out. But when you look at the Central Division, okay, you got Nashville, who's been probably the biggest surprise team in the NHL, leading that division with 50 points. Then you got Colorado, who's built to be a Stanley Cup contender. You got St. Louis, who's...
Yeah, looked, St. Louis. I think you can mix, looked, you can include looked, St. Louis in the
who's
top of the
looked like a contender themselves. Minnesota, Dallas, they're playing really well right now. And Winnipeg. Like, Winnipeg should be a playoff team.
Yeah, they should be. They should
right?
be. They're underperforming, I think.
So I get what you're saying. Like, because you don't really have, I mean, other than Colorado and Vegas, you know, which are teams that people projected to be Stanley Cup contenders at the end of the year, everybody else is just in the mix. And then you go to the Eastern Conference, and you have easily the four best teams in the league. I would say four of the best teams in the top ten in the league between Florida, Tampa, Toronto, and Boston. And then you switch over to the other division. You've got Carolina, who's a Stanley Cup contender. Rangers. I wouldn't necessarily consider them a contender, but
I don't think so.
They're a playoff contender.
They're a good team, but I don't think they're a cup contender. But they're close. Maybe with a big move or two at the deadline, maybe they could become that, but I don't think right now they are.
And a team nobody's really talking about because they sit last in the division, and partly because they have close to 10 games in hand on some of the teams in a division, are the New York Islanders. Like, if the New York Islanders get back on a run here, remember, a lot of people predicted the Islanders would be a Stanley Cup contender, and rightfully so. I mean, they went to the conference final 2 years in a row.
That's fair. It's fair.
So they have their work cut out for them. And I know, you know, we're, 35 games in for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they still got to find a way to finish out the rest of the season to put themselves in the best position possible come playoff time. But I know exactly where this conversation is going to go come playoff time if they end up meeting somebody in their division. It's how are they going to beat Florida? How are they going to beat Tampa? Can they beat the Boston Bruins? And if they can't, God forbid, I hope we don't go back down this road again. What's the question or the narrative going to be? Because you can't sit there and say if they lose the first round of the playoffs that, oh, blow it up again. You're losing to one of the best teams in the league in the first round.
Okay, that's all fair. I would put Florida, when you talk about Florida in comparison to Toronto, I think they're on the exact same level. Neither team has had playoff success. You know, the Huberto, Barkov, Ekblad era of the Panthers is much like the Matthews, Marner, Nylander era of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's not like they're winning a multitude of playoff series. So I think I don't know what you could say about Florida other than they need to prove it as much as the Leafs do. Tampa, obviously, you know, back-to-back cup champions. Boston, so much playoff success, so many grizzled vets, and I guarantee you they'll be making moves leading up to the deadline to augment
their
roster.
Oh, for sure they will.
For sure. And listen, I think when you're looking at the Bruins, you know, Bergeron's 37 years old. Marchand is, I think he's a year older than I think he's like 34, maybe 35. He's still, obviously, those guys are still at the top of their game. We know what Pasternak can do. But, I mean, I wouldn't say they're at the end of the road by any stretch, but that's a dangerous hockey team. And if they get rolling heading into the playoffs, coin flip series against the Leafs. I think it's a coin flip series for the Leafs against Florida. And I think Tampa obviously would be the favorites against the Leafs against anybody in the East, probably anybody in the NHL, save the Colorado Avalanche. So yeah, as we get closer to the playoffs, and listen, we're still a long ways away from April.
Yeah.
But you know, that's going to be a conversation, and I like a lot of the determination of, let's say they do hypothetically lose to one of those three teams that we've been discussing in their division. It's going to be the process as opposed to the result. Like if they lose in four games or five games, then yeah, there'll be a panic and disaster and blow it all up. But if it's a hard-fought seven-game series where you lose in overtime in game seven to Tampa, are you going to make those harsh reactions based on that? I don't know. But we have a lot of days, months ahead, weeks and months ahead to discuss that type of situation. And probably when you look back at last night, you hope that you don't face a goaltender who's as good as Carl Vimelka of the Arizona Coyotes, because he put on a clinic last night with 45 saves against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think it's one of those games where, yeah, the Leafs outshot Arizona 46-18. They got goalied, right? Because Vimelka played great. He was exceptional last night, and if you use the analytical model, expected goals and yada, 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 on a sample size larger than one game, the Leafs win that game probably 90% of the time. But for one night and one night only, it was Carl Vimelka who stole the show, and Peter Mrazek.
That's going to happen, man. It happens to every
team. It is
going to
happen, especially on the third game in four nights, second half of a back-to-back on the road.
Well, just look at the Maple Leafs' wins this year. How many times can you go back and look at their wins and say, wow, Jack Campbell stole that one for the Maple Leafs. So just as much as they've lost a game like that yesterday, they've got their fair share of wins, too, early on in the season, because at times when they weren't at their best, it was Jack Campbell standing on his head. So it evens out. It evens out. And, you know, you would have hoped for a better result last night, considering it was a homecoming for Austin Matthews, but it happens, man. And, you know, Sheldon Keefe touched on the fact that maybe he's seeing fatigue with this group. I don't necessarily believe that. I mean, this is clearly a team that's, you know, playing in a different world compared to what they're used to, and they're probably soaking it all in. Can't blame them. I mean, they can't come home and play any home games because all their home games have been postponed because there are no fans in the stands. And so, you know, living the road life, I know from my experiences of playing that you always loved looking at the schedule and seeing a nice road trip come up. But when you're stuck on the road for an extended period of time, it could catch up to you, especially if you're a guy that's, you know, away from your family, away from your kids, and you're sick and tired of living out of your suitcase and going out with the boys and extended nights, something. You're always doing things that you're normally not used to doing when you're at home. And sometimes you get sick of it, sometimes you don't. And I don't know if that's the type of fatigue that he's talking about, but clearly if you're the Maple Leafs, you want to stay on the road. Because if you come home, what do you have to look forward to? You're coming home to Toronto, a place that's got freezing cold weather, a place that's in lockdown, a place that doesn't allow you to go out to eat to restaurants, a place that doesn't allow you to play in front of any fans. So what's the reason for them to want to come home other than seeing their loved ones and their kids and family?
Yeah, seeing your loved ones, very overrated. I will say that... I will say it is looking freezing this weekend. Minus 14, the high on Saturday. So I'm sure the boys in blue want to stay as
weather
far
gods,
away.
I'm praying to you right now as a Bills Mafia fan. Please, please try to make the conditions, mild conditions in Buffalo so we can see my Bills.
Our Bills. Thank you.
Win a playoff game.
Yeah. Well, the snow's also coming next week, too, in Toronto. 5 centimeters expected on Sunday. Monday.
Bring the snow. You know
what?
4
on Tuesday and another 3 on Wednesday. So
bring
it's
the
be
snow.
Snowy.
Just get rid of the cold. Yeah.
20 fingers shaking his head as he's the only one who has to drive into the studio and has to deal with that nonsense. Sorry, buddy. Sorry. I apologize for that. We have a Would You Rather coming up on the other side. We'll be joined by our producer, Arad Asfandi, Mike Johnson, Mystic Mike, who was hit and miss last night when it comes to his prognostications for Leafs and Coyotes. I guess that's two of MJ's former teams in Toronto and Arizona. So surprised there wasn't some kind of video tribute for him as the Leafs on TSN took place last night. But we'll talk to MJ, his thoughts on their performance and his thoughts on how the East shakes out compared to the West. And we were talking about it. It looks to me that the path to the Stanley Cup Finals a lot easier if you're out west than you are out east. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. You're listening to First Up. It's TSN 1050.
The evening will culminate with a game.
A contest.
Each player will be given a choice between A or B. Decision-making in its rawest form.
Would you rather? You must make the decision.
This is Would You Rather here on First Up. Aaron Korolnik and Carla Koliakova with you. And this hour of First Up brought to you by Sokolov Lawyers. Seriously injured? Don't put it off. Call Sokolov. Visit areyouhurt.ca.
They only get paid when you do.
Bang! And the host of Would You Rather is our producer, Arad. Go ahead, Arad.
Would you rather bet the Eagles at plus 8.5 or bet the Steelers at plus 12.5?
Ooh. I'll go first on this one. I'll take the Eagles at plus 8.5, you said, Arad? Is that the line?
Eagles are 8.5, correct.
Yeah, I'll take the Eagles plus 8.5 just because I believe their offense can score points. And against an injury-depleted Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, I mean, whether or not they win or they keep it close, I can see them chasing the game and potentially scoring a last-minute backdoor TD to cover that spread. I don't have any faith in the Pittsburgh Steelers being able to keep up with the same way the Kansas City Chiefs can score. So I'll take the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, it's a big number for the Steelers. I would take the Eagles as well, but I'm on Tampa. I'm not on KC. I don't like to lay that big of a number, especially in a playoff game, and especially the way we saw KC play against Denver most recently. But I think the Eagles may be a backdoor at best, but I think that game will be out of hand. And maybe Jalen Hurts can drive him down in the fourth quarter and pick up a couple of garbage time touchdowns. But I expect Tampa's defense to perform very well and beat the Eagles handily. But if I had to pick between the two, I would take the Eagles by a narrow margin.
Would you rather have Kyler Murray this weekend, or would you rather have Derek Carr?
Kyler Murray, for sure.
Really?
Kyler Murray. Derek Carr? Yeah, obviously.
Well,
Kyler Murray's awesome.
I know, but he's playing against that Rams defense.
Oh, are we talking about, like, fantasy here?
No, just who do you trust, basically? Oh,
definitely Kyler. Man, Kyler Murray's way higher upside than Derek Carr. Way more talent.
I just remember the last time the Rams played the Arizona Cardinals in Arizona. The Rams defense made life miserable for Kyler Murray.
Oh, but are we talking about the defense? Is there a I think we're just talking about the quarterback. Who cares about who they're playing?
I'm going to take Derek Carr.
Kyler's up against Cincinnati. I feel better about him, like Derek Carr is. But yeah, I think Kyler Murray is a guy I'd rather have on Sunday than Derek Carr for sure.
I'm taking Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr has had a very underrated season when it comes to the attention that he probably deserves. You know, he's put up a ton of touchdowns, he's put up a ton of yards, and he's helped lead a Vegas team that everybody counted out when that whole John Gruden scenario broke with them into the playoffs. And a lot of it has been because of his play and his leadership. So I'll take Derek Carr over Kyler Murray.
One of the big prop bets I'm looking at this weekend has to do with Zay Jones, receiver for the Raiders. And you'll see this segment coming up on TSN Edge, TSN.ca, with Derek Taylor and myself, one of the prop masters. But Zay Jones has been really good. His number, 39.5 receiving yards, far too low against an exploitable Bengals secondary. I like that one a lot. What's next, Rod?
Would you rather have Darren Waller or George Kittle?
George Kittle. George Kittle.
Yeah. And Waller's hurt, too, right? He's really banged up. Hasn't done anything in a while.
Yeah, well,
he will play this weekend, though.
No, he played last week, too. He didn't do anything.
Yeah. I just think that, and I'm surprised because I had George Kittle on my fantasy team, and it was a very disappointing fantasy season for George Kittle, that San Francisco does not utilize this guy and integrate him more into their offensive scheme. I mean, obviously, they've got Ayuk, they've got Deebo Samuel, they've got a great running game. You know, with the three running backs that they use. But George Kittle is a beast when it comes to playing the tight end position. I'll choose him any day of the week. I got up against any other opponent, probably aside from Travis Kelce.
So I think the thing you're missing there, Coco, is, yeah, San Fran has an amazing running game. And a part of that is George Kittle's blocking. He's the best blocking tight end, arguably, in the NFL. So he's a big part of the creating space for guys like Elijah Mitchell and Deebo Samuel, who you mentioned in the run game. And for that reason and that reason alone, it's playoff football. George Kittle, a huge part of San Fran's offense. Yeah, he might not catch the ball as much as you'd like if you're talking about fantasy football, but man, does he make an impact in other areas. I think Kittle, the more complete tight end, and that's who I'd rather have this weekend.
Would you rather have Tuukka Rask for the rest of the season, or would you rather have Evgeny Malkin for the rest of the season?
Evgeny Malkin.
For sure.
Yes, no question. Okay. I mean, think about, you know, how much passion he played. He talked about it after his game in his return to the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup against Anaheim last night, where he scored two goals in his return. How much fun he was having, how great it is to win, how much he loves the game, how healthy he feels. I mean, you're adding an impact player to a team that has already made an impact in the season right now with how many, you know, wins that they've accumulated lately with a healthy Crosby, a healthy Letang, a Tristan Jarry in net who's playing out of his mind right now. You inject him, this Pittsburgh team's going to be scary come playoff time to play.
Oh, for sure. The scare right now. Yeah, I don't think this one's particularly close. It's Malkin by a large margin. That's no slight on Tuukka Rask, who I think could make some kind of an impact for Boston. But how big of an upgrade is Rask over Ullmark and Swayman? Maybe a little bit, but we haven't seen him in a while last year. No, I don't think it's a significant impact either. But I think Rask, 917 save percentage last year, and he had that hip surgery in the offseason, so we'll see how he's looking. But clearly Malkin, a significant difference maker for Pittsburgh. And I think he fundamentally alters their trajectory when it comes to their potential to win the Stanley Cup.
Would you rather keep Peter Mrazek for the rest of the season, or would you rather trade him for a cheaper backup option?
Well, I think if you had a preference right now to give yourself some cap flexibility and a team out there willing to trade for Peter Mrazek and his $3.8 million contract for the next 2 years as well, I think you would jump right on that. That would obviously be the preference, knowing that, you know, you've seen what Joseph Woll can give you in a backup position. You could potentially go out and get a cheaper, maybe Jaro Halak, who apparently is on the trade market right now, who makes $1.5 million and has been a solidified backup in a tandem situation. He's worked. So there are options out there, but, you know, again, who's taking Peter Mrazek and his contract? That's the difficulty here. I mean, yeah, you'd love for Edmonton to make the call and say, hey, what do you want for Peter Mrazek? Because I had him in Detroit, and, you know, I think he could bode well for us and be an upgrade for us in net. But unfortunately, every time there's a trade being discussed, you've always got to look at the salary cap number because nobody has any salary cap space.
Man, I don't think the Leafs have any interest in trading Peter Mrazek now. Maybe in the offseason we'll talk about it, but there's more than half a season to go. Jack Campbell is going to need some rest. The Leafs are going to have to win some hockey games if they have any hope of winning the Atlantic Division, obviously, to keep ahead of Florida and Tampa and keep up with them anyway. So the idea of trading Mrazek would be foolish. It doesn't make any sense. Keep him. You worry about the salary cap ramifications in the offseason, not in the midst of this season. They still have ways to clear cap space for an acquisition this year, and that way is getting rid of Nick Ritchie, and I think they're going to be able to do that as they get healthy.
Speaking of Nick Ritchie, it was Bob McKenzie touched on the broadcast last night that with Marner and Engvall returning on Saturday, the Maple Leafs right now are going to have to make a roster move because they're going to be in a little bit of a cap trouble. And I 20 Fingers just mentioned to me on the group chat saying that Sandin's absence in the game yesterday was due to cap reasons. Go figure. You got to keep one of your young star players out of the lineup because of cap reasons. There you go, NHL. Congratulations. You've screwed up the game of hockey again.
Well, Sandin went full Scott Stevens the night before in Vegas.
Ten hits.
Like, wow. What was going on there? He had a growl to his game. And maybe he was just like, man, my hips, my ass, like, it's just too much. Yeah, too much hitting, and I need a night off, coach. And he's like, all right, well, save $60,000 on the salary cap, so let's do it. That's a no-brainer. What else you got, Rod?
Would you rather be where the Lakers are, you know, a veteran team that might bounce back at the end of the year, but he just looked very rusty? Or would you rather be where the Nets are? Clearly, arguably, one of the best teams in the NBA, but you don't have your point guard for arguably half the season.
Go ahead, AK. You can go first on this.
Clearly, the Nets. I mean, they're the favorites to win the NBA title. Yeah, they might not have Kyrie. Maybe, who knows how that all shakes out, but they still have Harden and Durant, two of the top five players in the NBA, and a very, very good chance to win the NBA title. The Lakers, I mean, they're saddled with Russell Westbrook's contract this year and next. LeBron is year 19 season, still exceptional player. Anthony Davis has been banged up, and they've looked just dreadful in the defensive end. I don't think this one's particularly close. Clearly, would much rather be the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I'm going to side with AK on this one as well, too, because Brooklyn has proven they can win without Kyrie, with Durant and Harden and the rest of the Brooklyn Nets that they've been able to assemble. The Lakers just haven't proved they can win with any group they put together right now this season. Obviously, they're missing Anthony Davis, and maybe there'll be a jolt that they'll get back when and if he returns at some point this season. But if you're the Lakers and you're sitting at 500 right now, 21-21, you're in the eighth seed, and you know I can't imagine that they can muster anything together to catch anyone significant ahead of them to stay away from Phoenix, Golden State, or Memphis, who's been one of the best teams in the NBA over the last stretch at 10-0 on a 10-game winning streak. If the Lakers, you sneak into the playoffs, That's who you have to play in your first round, where the Brooklyn Nets, where they stand right now, they know they're going to get a bottom feeder in their first round matchup. So I would choose the Brooklyn Nets regardless of what the Lakers situation ends up turning out to be.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, we could see a Brooklyn Nets-Toronto Raptors first round right. if things go according to plan, and we'll see the Raptors back in action tomorrow night here on TSN 1050.
Revenge for the Nets, because of 2 years ago when the Raptors swept them in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right. Remember that? They had, like, that entire roster was devoid of literally everybody. It was just bare bones, to say the least. And speaking of the Raptors, Phil Handy, former Raptors assistant coach during the 2019 championship run, he was on a podcast yesterday, and he told a story about Kawhi Leonard when the Raps were down 0-2 against the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. What did Kawhi do? What did Kawhi say to turn the tide in that series? A great story. We'll play it for you next.
Track. I was
born. Yes, the new Weekend. 20 Fingers. Big fan of the Weekend. Loves the Weekend. He is our technical producer on the show. Does a fantastic job. Does our man 20 Fingers. And I would certainly argue that Phil Handy did a fantastic job as an assistant coach for the Toronto Raptors in the 2019 title run. He's gone on. He's now with the LA Lakers. But he was on a podcast yesterday with, I believe, Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. And they were talking about the 2019 title run, talking about Kawhi Leonard. And Phil Handy told a story that I had never heard before. He's talking about the Milwaukee Bucks Raptors series, the Eastern Conference Finals. If you can recall, the Raps go down 0-2. They go to overtime in game three and, of course, come back to win the series in six games. But after they go down 0-2, Nick Nurse in the locker room, Kawhi Leonard, clearly a lot of consternation amongst the roster. And here's what happened.
Think of Kawhi's movements, how he is. People think he's robotic, but that man like the Terminator for real.
Yeah.
Like he carries that. I'm going to tell a story. To me, that's personified. We were down 2-0 against Milwaukee. You know, Nick Nurse came into the locker room and said, you know, we're going to make some adjustments. We'll get back to Toronto and we're going to be ready. And Kawhi said, the adjustment is I'm guarding Giannis. We walked out the locker room.
Wow. Man, I miss Kawhi. What a player.
I miss him too.
What it do, baby?
Yeah. What it do, man? Why don't you come back and what it do, man? Come on.
How about you come back
and play for the Clippers before you come back and play for Toronto?
Hey.
Yeah, there it is. There it is again. But Kawhi, I mean, that was credited largely to Nick Nurse, that kind of adjustment that was made after game two. And keep in mind, Giannis just torched the Raptors in games one and two. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at it, you're like, all right, the Raps are done. They can't guard Giannis. And people are like, oh, well, Nick Nurse, you got to build the wall against Giannis. But the best wall against any great NBA player is the best defensive player in the last, 20 years. And that would, of course, probably be Kawhi Leonard. He and Draymond Green, maybe Rudy Gobert would qualify in that category. But in that year, I mean, not only offensively was Kawhi putting up Michael Jordan-like numbers, the defensive prowess was on display each and every night. He took the best player from the opposing team, and he's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm playing 40 minutes, probably going to take 25 shots, score 30-plus points, just absolutely dominate on the offensive side of the floor. But I'm also going to guard one of the best players in the NBA as well, and did he ever. Man, Kawhi is a legend.
He sure is, man, and so I'm so thankful he was able to provide us with, you know, what we were able to witness, and that's the Raptors winning a championship and on that incredible run, you know, the wild ride of the anticipation with every playoff game that they played. I still, you know, just living it through my head right now, just remember the anxiety that I lived with as a fan of the Raptors. You know, with the road games and going to the home games and
good times.
It was great time. And the parade, it was awesome. Everything was awesome.
It was a hot day.
Too bad. It really was. It was just too bad that it all came to an end when he decided that, you know, better days and you know, better success was with the Clippers.
Better weather.
Yeah.
Much better weather. Would you rather not play all year or endure what's going on outside in Toronto these days? It's pretty
close. Could you imagine if Kawhi was with the Raptors right now during COVID with no fans in the stands and in lockdown and, you know, with the weather that we're enduring and just be miserable out of his mind saying, I can't believe I made this decision to stay here.
I'm sure like not only NHL and the NBA too, the players must be like, what the hell's going on in the city? Like, why am I going everywhere else? And it's like, you're good to go and live your life. But here it's just, we don't have any fans in the stands. The Raptors mascot is beefing with Devin Booker as the only fan in the arena. Just
he had a nice little beef going on Twitter yesterday with his new profile pic.
That was good stuff. Yeah. Devin Booker and the Raptors mascot. Best of friends now after their little kerfuffle of sorts a couple of nights ago. The Raptors last.
I bet you Giannis was happy to see Kawhi leave, though. It paved the way for him to win his championship.
Indeed, it did. We will pave the way for Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, on Leafs Breakfast. On the other side, we'll recap last night's 2-1 loss for the Leafs to the Arizona Coyotes, a game that will always be known as the Carl Vemelka Show. And we'll get into it with MJ. As First Up continues, you're listening to TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
With a 3.30 goals against average. Matthews! The shutout's over! Austin Matthews comes in off the left wing, and the wrist shot ends the shutout streak of Vemelka, and it's tied at ones.
Take that, Vemelka. Unfortunately, that was the only goal that the Toronto Maple Leafs could muster last night. A 2-1 loss to the Arizona Coyotes. And you could look at it as a schedule loss. Their third game in four nights. They played a game in Vegas the night before, and a game that ended in a shootout. So the longest possible conclusion to a game the previous evening, and then they had to travel, head to Arizona. But, I mean, it's the Coyotes. They're not good at all. They're not quite at Montreal level of being terrible, but not far off. And, listen, Arizona, a team the Leafs should beat on any given night. And they played well enough to win that game. I mean, they outshot the Coyotes 46-18. So, you could call it getting goalied, I suppose. This Carl Vemelka character in his 20th career start made a number of very, very difficult saves, and he was outstanding, no doubt. And Peter Mrazek, I think he was probably average. It could have probably saved the second goal that went in. The first goal from Ryan Dzingel, who scored twice last night, by the way, was, you know, a couple of bad bounces for Mrazek. But I think clearly the story of the game last night, Coco, was Vemelka. And I'm sure there's been so many times throughout your playing career where there's been a goalie who's just stood on in his head and you just put your arms up and like, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
Like, we're creating as many opportunities as possible, but just haven't been able to convert on them.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's just one of those nights. And I think Austin Matthews touched on it, talked about adjusting to facing a hot goalie. And I'm not sure 20 Fingers has that clip ready as he's trying to get Mike Johnson on the line, but it's just, it is what it is. I mean, when you throw that much at the goalie and he's basically making acrobatic save after acrobatic save, there's not really much you can do other than just try to grind it out, which clearly the Maple Leafs didn't have enough in the tank to do.
It was the Leafs and the Coyotes, again, a 2-1 loss for the Maple Leafs, but that was a game last night that I refer to as the Mike Johnson Bowl. Let's welcome in former Leaf and Coyote to Leafs Breakfast. It is MJ. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Good morning. Now, the thing is, AK, is that there's a lot of games that could be the Mike Johnson Bowl between the Habs and the Leafs, the Coyotes and the Leafs, so pick your poison. There's a lot, but yeah, that was a weird game. I think Carlos said it well. I mean, there's some games where I'm not saying Toronto was perfect, but they were more than good enough. More than good enough to win that game comfortably. And had they been able to score one early, that probably would have been a different story. But there's some games like that where you can't even be that frustrated. Or frustrated. You can't be that angry with them that they didn't win. You're not going to win every game. That's happened. Goaltenders can play well, even ones you may not know. But the Melfi gets peppered every single night, and he still stands in there and does a good job. So they won't be happy they lost that game, but I mean, you shoot a team 50-20, you're going to win 98 times out of 100. That was just one of the two times you don't.
That was one of those games where Matthews probably put a lot of money up on the board because it was a game in Arizona. He had a lot of friends and family, and he just walked over to his Arizona dressing room and said, look, clearly we didn't win. I didn't give this to my team. Maybe I should pay you for it because you won that game for your team. So here you go. Congratulations.
Well, yes. I try to think what derivatives. A lot of times for those games, I put some sort of derivative of their own number, right? It's like a massive game for Carlo might be, you know, $280 or maybe it's $2,800 or maybe even larger than that. I don't know, but 34, who knows how big it got for him.
Right.
But that'd be disappointing for him. He played well. He had tons of shots, tons of chances. Willie, right from the opening faceoff, looked like he was going to score for sure in that game. They had so many chances the first 14 minutes, even after DeZingle got the kind of strange first goal. Like, there were so many looks, and you're thinking it's just a matter of time. Like, they're going to score four in this game, and goalie just wouldn't let it happen. It's the reality of the game sometimes, how it goes.
Johnny, you mentioned the start, and this has been a trend that we've seen in this Maple Leafs team since they returned from their break. I mean, you go back to the Ottawa game, the Colorado game, the Vegas game the other night, and even in Arizona. This team has gotten off to really, really good starts. But you hear Sheldon Keefe talk after these games, and he's concerned about the way they finish. And he mentioned yesterday that he senses that this team looks tired. I don't know how a team that has had so many days off between games can look tired. Do you think this is just maybe a team that is enjoying life away from what their life right now in Toronto would look like, with no fans in the stands, can't do much, and they're just living it up right now in some of these other great cities that they're visiting? They're playing good hockey, they've gotten some great results, but ultimately, you know, maybe their focus is not quite entirely there in the late in the game. I don't know. How do you see it?
I mean, I don't think so. I think that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, I think they played Colorado and Vegas, two pretty good teams. Colorado is just rolling everybody right now. And you get up by multiple goals. That's how games go. Carlo, you know this. You play anybody and you get up 5-2, the last 15 minutes, that team is going to push. And
right.
You're going to look like maybe tired, but I think it's just more score effects of the fact that you're leading. And while I would agree that they are probably happy to be in a place where they can go out for dinner and see people and have fans in the stands, I don't think the guys on the road this year, Carlo, are behaving the same way that they've behaved in years past. Not just the Leafs, I'm talking about league-wide. Like, I think there's a general awareness of safety because you can talk about, yeah, they can go out, they can live it up, but can they? Because there's still a few players that haven't tested positive. And if you go out and just kind of live it up, you're going to test positive, and that means your team's going to test positive. So I don't think it's that at all. I think, you know, it's probably just playing some good teams, the nature of score effects, and, that's just the appearance of it. I don't think there's too much to read into it as far as behavior or fitness. It's just, you know, you get on your heels against good teams, you look tired because that's how you look.
Our guest is Mike Johnson, TSN hockey analyst. Mystic Mike, the prince of prognostication. And MJ, your hit on TSN Edge. Of course, you had the Austin Matthews anytime goal as one of your best bets, and that hits again last night. His ninth straight road game where he scored at least one goal. That is a Maple Leafs franchise record.
Crazy.
He's just two goals behind Draisaitl now for the league lead in scoring. It's been an incredible run that this guy has done, and we shouldn't be surprised, but I mean, like, what do you even, like, have to say? Like, what do you say about Austin Matthews at this point other than he's the best goal scorer in the NHL?
Well, he is that, but I think we got to stop phrasing it as he's on a great run. Like, this is just his life. His life
That's
is
who
just
he
run.
Is.
Like, this is what he does. It's not a hot streak. It's a hot streak since he turned pro. I mean, there's nothing else to say. Again, you know, Mitch Marner's not around, and Mitch is a really good player who works really well with Austin, and you know, he's doing with different kind of players on his wing, and while Michael Bunting has been effective, Michael Bunting is by no means a top-flight offensive setup guy. But Austin does so many things well that I think in the tsunami of excellence of his goal scoring, we talk about his shot and his release and breaking with Daniel Marois' records. Like, he's also a very, very good defensive player, and I think people lose track of that when you focus so much on offensive exploits. The way he takes the puck away, he's always in the right spot. He's become more diligent in that area of the game. He's just one of the best few players in the world, and he plays like it so often. And maybe that's the takeaway. Maybe that's the big message, that he's able to do it with great consistency, which is a challenge even the best players have. And he's meeting that challenge of bringing it every single night. Again, last night, he could have had four.
He
should have been leading the league in scoring after last night. Like that, you know, that's the expectation. That's the kind of game he had. So it's, you know, another excellent game by him. And, you know, that's just who he is.
Andre Kasha didn't have a point last night, but he played more than 20 minutes. I thought he had another really quality performance. And leading into last night's game, he had points in seven consecutive games. We see him up alongside Austin Matthews and Michael Bunting on the top line. And I'm not trying to create a controversy here, MJ, but Sheldon Keefe would at least contemplate the idea of keeping Kasha on the top line alongside Matthews and Bunting and maybe putting Marner down with Tavares and Nylander, perhaps?
No, I don't. I think when everyone's healthy, I think there's, well, one, Mitch plays so well with Austin. They flipped them around before, and it's been fine, but Mitch plays so well with Austin. The two of them together are magic. And the other unnoticed part about what's going on is that with Engvall out, the checking line, Cobb, hasn't been quite as good on this road trip. He's relied on so much, no doubt, and he's put in tough spots, defensive zone starts, good lines he's got to play against. But he's done a job all season long, largely playing with Engvall and Kasha. And I think getting everyone healthy also would allow them to put Engvall and Kasha back to comp, because like his expected goal rates were well below 50% the last few games, and that's not something you want to see out of your checking line center. You want him to hover around 50%. It means he's doing a pretty good job when you're asking him to take on such tough assignments. So I think getting that third line back up and running as Keith envisions it, which would be completely different if you put Marner on there. It's not that Marner's not a good defensive player, but, you know, just different. But to get that looking and playing the way Keith envisions them, I think is important to Sheldon Keefe and how this team operates. And then it also will make the fourth line better as you kind of do that trickle-down effect. So, no. The answer is no. I don't think they're going to take a long look. I think Kasha is a great utility guy, slide up, slide down. But when everything's rolling properly, he's on the third line with Kopp and Engvall.
Couldn't agree with you more, Johnny. I mean, let's be honest. Austin Matthews is saying, hey, Mitch, so are you going to pass me more pucks so I can get more goals? Because we've been talking about this for a long time. Anybody who plays with Mitch Marner, because he's such a great passer, is going to get more goals. And Matthews is clearly chasing down Draisaitl right now for the Rocket. And you put Marner back beside him, I think he gets it. And that's where he belongs. Let's not try to reinvent the wheel here and put him on the third line and say that Andre Kasha is the...
Right.
Is
no
the,
one said that. I said put him with Nylander and Tavares, not a third line.
Yeah, but then what do you do with Kerfoot? Now you're mixing everything up for no reason.
The reason would be that Kasha has looked really good alongside Austin Matthews and Michael Bunting.
Good in the short term. Good in the short term, not a solution for the long term.
There's a reason why Andre Kasha is not a 70-point guy.
Right,
not yet. I'm the president of the Andre Kasha fan club.
No, I'm the founding member. Three years ago, I said how good Andre Kasha was.
He just
could never stay healthy. He went to Boston, was not good, but I'm still like, no. When he's healthy, you look at his metrics. He's always productive, but he's not elite productive. He's just steady Eddie, tons of shots. He'll get you, you know, even strength points. Is exactly what you want in a third line swing guy who can move up because guys have to move up and down, and he's doing it just the way they would want. But no, I think he slides back down to the third line. Second line stays the same. Get Bunting and Marner and Matthews the same, and then you see what happens, because it's been a while since they've kind of just been able to roll a few games in a row with the same group and kind of like, these are our lines, and like let's get on a roll here.
Kasha is the perfect versatile guy, because he's a guy that can play, you know, up and down your lineup, not a guy that just can sit in one slot. And you know, credit to him, he's looked good, he's played good, and the Leafs need more of that from him. But you mentioned him in Boston, and Obviously, Boston steamrolls through Montreal, and I feel bad for the guys in Montreal that they've got to play 47 more games. But just the fact that Boston is reeling right now, you look at this division. I mean, as good of a season the Maple Leafs are having, they're third in their division because they've got two Florida teams right now that are some kind of hot, and Boston right up their tail. I mean, what are we looking at here for the Maple Leafs potential matchup again for playoff time in this division with these three other good teams?
Pick your poison, eh, Carlo? I mean, like,
it's amazing.
We put so much, there's so much, and there will be so much pressure on the Leafs to win in a playoff round, right?
Right.
But they're going to play an opponent where they could conceivably play very well and lose. It would not be a surprise. It would not be an upset. It would not be some underperforming Leaf team that can't win. They just play a team that's as good or maybe even better than them. I mean, that's the reality of how good this division is. I was looking at the numbers, AK. You'll like this, right? Obviously, Colorado is the Stanley Cup favorite right now. But Tampa, Florida, Toronto are 2, 3, and 4. Like, the next three favorites for the Stanley Cup are in the same division, which almost by the numbers, that doesn't make sense because they all can't come out of there. Like, the fact that the path goes through each other makes it harder to win a Stanley Cup. And then throw Boston in, who now is rolling, who now just got Tuukka Rask, who I'm excited to see play again tonight, back in the fold. Boston is no slouch. I don't think Boston is quite as good as the teams above them, but they're pretty darn close, and it wouldn't stun me to see them do well in the playoffs. So, it is a daunting gauntlet that Toronto is going to have to go through in the first two rounds just to get to the conference final.
Yeah, the path to the Stanley Cup from out west is way easier, at least from my vantage point, than it is.
Why? Well, I mean, not only talking about all day long. Please.
Well, exactly. You talk about the Atlantic. I mean, the Leafs or Florida or Tampa might have to go through Carolina or Washington or Pittsburgh. Like,
that's why they need to go back to the 1-8 seeding. They gotta get away from this division seeding with wild card and stuff like that, because you have some divisions that are stronger than the other.
Much stronger.
You're losing good teams in the first round.
Yeah, but Carlo, then there's no point in even having divisions. You might just have, because the unbalanced schedule mandates you have kind of divisional playoffs, and I think they want division, like they want Toronto Boston, they want Pitt Washington, like these are the series they want to have happen year after year. And so, while it stinks that good teams will go out in the first round, it's still part of that great first and second round matchups that you're playing against similar kind of teams. And if you're going to go all the way, speaking from a guy who never did it,
makes two of us.
Yeah, like
three.
You're going to have to beat those teams anyways, right? Like you're going to have to go through those best teams regardless. Maybe not quite as many, maybe not quite as early, but if you want to win a Stanley Cup, you're going to have to beat the good teams. So whether you play them in the third round or the first, you still got to win. So I'm not on board with going 1-16 or 1-8. It just would be, it'd be just too different looking.
Our guest is Mike Johnson, TSN hockey analyst here on Leafs Breakfast. Let's go to the birthday boy. Connor McDavid turns 25 years old today, and he had some comments yesterday, MJ, that kind of stirred a little bit of controversy on the social media circles, talking about the idea of bringing in Evander Kane. And why don't we take a listen, and we'll have you react to it.
I'm not really here to discuss optic issues. You know, if fans don't like it or the media doesn't like it or whatever, I think, it is what it is. You know, I'm sure there's lots of things that go on the ice and whatnot that fans don't like. And we don't necessarily have to discuss those up here with you guys. So, the public opinion is something that obviously matters a lot. But we're here to try to win games and try to put together a good team on the ice.
What did you make of McDavid's comments there, Mike?
I could see why some people would be, I don't know, maybe disappointed that he didn't take a harder stance against maybe not having Kane on his team. Sounded to me like a guy who, one, has already had a conversation with the general manager and knows Evander Kane's coming. he's at this point, what is the horse out of the barn? Like, he can't say, I don't want him here, because he's essentially already signed there. speaks to the fact that, you know, Connor McDavid is desperate to win. Like, he wants just good players on his team, and he's not going to worry about it. And I think maybe more than anything, more than an indictment of Connor, it is illuminating in that this is the way that hockey culture, NHL culture, generally speaking, hockey players think. Like, they don't pay a lot of attention to people's lives away from the rink and what they may or may not do. It's just kind of what you do on the ice with each other. And that's all, generally speaking, hockey has cared about. And I think Connor just looks at it the same way. I don't care about what he does with his vaccination papers or whether he travels across borders. It doesn't bother me. I'm not saying he should, but I think Connor is absolutely just kind of par for the course for what hockey is like. So he's the best player in the game. Maybe he's reflective of what the game is like in moments like this. He just worries about trying to win games, and that's kind of was reflected in that statement. Like, he was obviously very uncomfortable. Like, he shrugged his shoulders, what, 10 times in 30 seconds? Kind of, well, I mean, I don't know what to say. I'm tap dancing right now, but I do kind of want him on the team because he's good. Maybe I should say something, but I'm not really comfortable in what I should say or how I should feel about it. So I'm just going to try to get through this question without saying anything. And that would, some people would be disappointed in that.
Yeah, it almost seemed like he was taking a Tom Brady approach to his answer where, you know, even you can talk about the Antonio Brown situation in the NFL where everybody was critical about, you know, Antonio Brown and some of his antics, but Tom Brady was there to his defending because he knew what he could bring on the football field and what that could do for his team and his legacy if they win. And clearly, you said it best, Johnny, this guy's feeling the pressure of the expectation that is set from him and the team that they're not meeting right now. And he's looking at Vander Kane potentially helping the team on the ice, where he's not really focused on a lot of the public optics that may come with adding a guy like Evander Kane. So you can understand what he's saying, whether it's right or it's wrong. You know, sometimes decisions that are made are not in the hands of some of the players, especially when there's so many people's jobs that are on the line and just trying to find a fix. And maybe that's the cap that's creating this situation because Edmonton can't do anything otherwise to try to change the makeup of their team. And this is a desperate move by them.
It does. Well, is it or is it? Because I just say this, Carlo, two things. One, Connor has the kind of juice that he could make this not happen. Like, if 100%. He really cared about it passionately, 100%. He could say no, this is no good, I don't care. And if he came out public and say, I don't know Evander Kane, but I know this and this, and I'm just not comfortable. Like, he has, like, I couldn't make that happen. You couldn't make that happen. Mm-hmm. Connor could make that happen. So, you know, it's not out of his hands. He does have control of those kind of things because of that kind of player. But I will dispute the idea that this is a desperate move. Yes, I understand it appears desperate, but Tampa was in on him. Is Tampa desperate? I don't think so. Florida was in on him. Is Florida desperate? I don't think so. Carolina's in on him. Is Carolina desperate? I don't think so. They're just the best team. So I don't think it's a sign like, you know, if the Oilers were rolling, would they not do this? I still think they would because every other team that's good, virtually, is trying to sign him as well. So it's a league-wide thing. It's not just an Edmonton thing. It's not just a desperation thing. It's a league-wide thing that, you know, teams are okay with the blowback, with the optics, as you call them, of signing Evander Kane because of the price he's going to cost and what he's going to bring on the ice, and they're just going to deal with the other stuff because they care more about the ice stuff than they care about the other stuff. It's very clear that that's a league-wide feeling. It's pretty unanimous across all 32 teams.
I'm just glad we don't have to see Evander Kane on Tampa. Like, the last thing that anyone who...
Well, you might not see him on Edmonton now either, considering the league has just stepped in.
Yeah, that's true.
Across the border or not.
That is true. Well, that's a fun situation. Never-ending content from our buddy Evander Kane. So hopefully that keeps coming for
it's
us.
Not our
MJ,
buddy,
MJ, thank
though.
You don't for doing this for us. As always, we appreciate your contributions, and we'll speak to you next week.
All right, boys. Have a great weekend.
All right. See you, that's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. I was tailing the Matthews anytime goal. I guess I was on the Matthews anytime goal before I saw MJ's TSN Edge segment, but he was on Kessel under 0.5 points as well.
Wow.
I think that one hit. I mean, Kessel
did hit.
not a big point producer these days anyways, but he'll go somewhere, right? You know, like maybe one of the teams that were in on Evander Kane could be looking at Kessel and be like, yeah, I could slide him in on our third line. Maybe he could put up a couple
You got to do math gymnastics in order for teams to make that happen because, you know, he makes $8 million. How are you going to fit an $8 million cap hit onto a contending team?
Well, it's like the Foligno deal last year. Remember the
You're going to have to find one third place, party.
You retain the salary there, and yeah, it is the ultimate.
Well, you might. Well, if you go to like teams like Edmonton or teams like Florida or teams like Tampa, you're going to probably have a fourth team in there to swallow that cap hit because they are so tight up against the cap that it'll be tough to fit in there. So we'll see. I don't know. Like, again, the buzz around the trade deadline is that you want to see player movement and the hope that there's going to be player movement, but the cap is another animal in itself that teams have to deal with, and it's just a crappy scenario year after year that the NHL is dealing with when it comes to creating excitement around the game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. It is a struggle, but that's why the GMs are paid the big bucks.
Like, how great would it be? How great would it be right now if the Edmonton Oilers, considering the slump that they're in, could actually go out and make a big trade and bring in a different piece to that group instead of trying to bring in a guy like Evander Kane, who is, you know, pretty controversial with a lot of the baggage that he carries with him because of his off-ice issues. Like, that's creating excitement around Edmonton because they're looking at the player, but now they have to deal with other scenarios that come with it, and a scenario that might not even play itself out or allow itself to play itself because he could be suspended again by the league. Remember, he got 20 games for a fake vaccination card. What do you think he's going to get if he gets caught breaking COVID-19 protocols?
Jeez. Oh, yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. Not an ideal situation for Evander Kane. You'd think, like, you know, someone would advise this dude, like, hey, you might not want to do this. You might want to just stay put, you know, let things play out, get yourself signed, and then you could break any protocols.
But here's the thing. I mean, the reason why he continues to put himself in these situations is because that's why teams question whether or not he can be trusted. He's careless. He's careless, and he doesn't prioritize some of the more important things it takes to play the game of hockey because he's got so many other things outside of hockey that have created a distraction in his life.
Would be fascinating if there was some kind of Netflix series tracking the trials and tribulations of one Evander Kane. Well, there is one that will track the PGA Tour, the behind the scenes, behind the ropes on the PGA Tour, expected to come in early 2023. And we'll have Bob Weeks on at 9:30 to discuss what's going on with that, because it sounds like it's going to be just outstanding, especially considering the producers of the F1 version, Drive to Survive. And Coco, I don't know if you've seen any of that, but that is just an incredible, incredible look at F1, and that has made such a massive mark and created so many new fans, especially in North America, of F1. So loved watching that. I've not seen the third season is the one I have yet to catch up on. I'm on to True Story now with Kevin Hart as the and Wesley Snipes.
Must be nice. It must be nice to have all the time in the world to watch whatever you want.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. Yeah, I really enjoy it. Thank you. It's I don't know if that's a great show, True Story. I'm undecided. I watched the first couple apps last night.
What you're talking to me right now about brings me back to my Philadelphia Flyer days where I signed with them in the middle of November, and I went by myself for the first month because I was on a two-way deal and I had to sort of stay in a hotel for the first 30 days. And once that 30 days was up, they said I can go get my own place, which when I got my own place, my family didn't come live with me. My wife and my daughter at the time didn't come live with me right away. They would just come make visits, you know, once a month or so. And I remember, you know, that season I wasn't playing much after the first month that I had signed there. I actually went two straight months without playing. So you can imagine what my daily routine was like. It was get up and go practice, get bag skated, have lunch, and then just have countless hours by myself at my condo. And I would binge watch shows to the point where, you know, that's when I got addicted to Sons of Anarchy, because I binge watched the whole seven seasons. I think I did seven seasons in like 6 days, because my schedule would be go practice, bag skate, ate lunch, bring home leftovers from lunch at the rink.
Romaine.
And just binge watch, park myself on the couch, binge watch Sons of Anarchy. I felt like I was living in the life of Sons of Anarchy because of how much I was binge watching it. And then I would do that with the next show, the next. It just got into, I got into a routine of like 2 straight months of just watching and binge watching TV series until I started playing again. And then, you know, totally lost that routine. But yeah, that's the way it was, and I can imagine that's the same way it is you right now.
True story. We'll watch Drive to Survive. I've watched almost everything, let's be honest here.
Now, one TV show that I'm excited for the next season to come out of is Ozark.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it soon?
Yeah, wasn't it supposed to be mid-January?
Like, I think on Friday. Tomorrow it comes out.
So the new season of Ozark comes out tomorrow?
We'll get 20 fingers to confirm, but yeah, I believe Ozark comes out either tomorrow or Saturday.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I will be pumped up for that one, too. That's a
Friday night Ozark.
Yeah, Friday night Ozark. I mean, we've got the Raps and the Pistons for sure. That'll be something I'll be dialed into, but I mean, you know, the weekend is kind of chewed up by the NFL. I mean, I'll be.
Well, that's why I said Friday night.
Well, yeah, I mean, 4:30. 20 fingers, what do you got? Next week. Apparently it's next week. 21st.
So. The 21st?
Next Friday, yeah.
Next Friday, season 3 of Ozark. Oh, dang, can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Can't wait. Have you seen Animal Kingdom?
No.
Oh, okay. Your next TV series, Animal Kingdom. There's 5 seasons of it. Incredible. Mm. Incredible, buddy.
All right. Maybe I'll take a look.
Take my word.
I always take your word. We always take the word of Ed Werder, our NFL analyst, here on First Up every Thursday morning. And I am pumped to chat with Ed. We'll talk about the Cowboys, big showdown with the Niners. Everyone seems to love the Niners, and I don't see it. I think the Cowboys do work, and we'll get into that with Ed, who joins us at 8:30. Josh Lundberg for his normal Thursday visit, our Butabi brother. Sup?
Butabi.
Bob Weeks. Maybe we'll get some picks ahead of the Sony Open, which tees off a little bit later today. Corey Connors among the favorites. I have 2 picks in particular I've already bet, and we'll reveal them a little bit later in the program. The third hour, First Up on the way. You're listening to TSN 1050.